Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter podcast. Today, I'm joined by John. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. Nice to see you, mate. When we normally talk, we're normally like right in the throes of like cut and thrust recruitment and this, that, and the other. So I was saying to you last night on the phone, it's nice to be actually just sat down with you, having a chat, mate.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, no, thanks for coming on, John. And for the listeners that don't know you, I'm just going to do you a bit of an intro. So, John Owen, back in the day, started back in 2008, mathematics researcher at the Sam Houston State University. You then progressed on in the early stages of your career as an IT admin. You then were a network security analyst, and you then moved on to the Mathis Independent School District as a network admin and technology specialist. You were then at the Disgrohl Children's Hospital as a network support analyst. You were then at Paragon Offshore as an IT security analyst. And then as we move forward, this is where you started to get more senior in your career at SET Solutions, progressed really nicely from a senior security consultant right up to a practice manager. And currently you are the executive director of Next Gen Cyber Ed. And currently you are at Fulcrum Technology Solutions, again, progressed nicely, started off as a principal consultant, and you currently are the director of security analytics. Welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, good. It's good to have you on. And I know I've done you a bit of an intro there. I never think I can do it as well as you. So I'll start where I always start, which is, who are you, mate? What do you get up to on a day-to-day basis? And what's a day in the life of John like right now?
Definitely keeping busy between the nonprofit and the day-to-day security analytics work, leading an absolutely fantastic team of engineers and consultants. In my spare time, I tinker and break things, as I put it. Right now, I'm doing some actual hardware development, software development as well. I have a family with two boys and a little girl, an awesome wife, so they definitely keep me busy and keep me on my toes. And they're in the midst of school right now, so it's a lot of football and cheer and band and all that fun stuff you get into. So it's a great experience, but yeah, definitely keeping me busy.
Cool. Yeah, I can remember having a few conversations a few weeks back, and there was a few kind of off the record conversations that were going something like, I'm quite glad they've all gone back to school because we need a rest.
It's definitely give and take for sure. Yeah, more quietness during the day, but my evenings and weekends are pretty much all dedicated to them now. So it's good.
Cool. So, John, yeah, it'd be nice to get what it's like to lead a team. It'd be nice to get into kind of getting up to that director level, because there'll be people listening that want to optimize their career growth and career progression. But before we get into that, it'd be cool to dive into the non-for-profit. I know me and you have spoke about this over the phone before. There's some real cool things going on. There's a lot of stuff going on that people talk about, but they often don't do anything. And I know that you are taking action and doing stuff. So, yeah, can you tell us about the solution that provides and how that's helping the community and helping out in general, mate?
Yeah, I'd love to. Looking back, I started Next Gen Cyber Ed right before COVID, honestly, in the middle of that. I'd been working with a couple of fantastic organizations that reached out to me. We Teach CS and cyber.org, just to name a couple, that were really entrenched with providing more avenues for cybersecurity education and particularly educators and students in K-12, and really filling the skills gap that we have here in cybersecurity and have had for many years. And so working with them, I identified and noticed there's also a gap with support from the industry and experts that are actually working in the industry and on the professional side of things. There's a fair amount of support in the collegiate sector. It's slowly making its way down into high schools and middle schools now. It's a great thing to see. But at the start, we started the organization to help, to put in some words there. We started by creating a nationwide cyber range, so providing computer resources for teachers all across the nation. And this was, again, during COVID. So we had kids logging in from school parking lots and certainly from home in very rural areas. It was a really good opportunity, struck a good timing there to provide remote resources there. But teachers really struggle with having the ability to teach on the tools that cybersecurity really needs. They didn't know what tools were relevant. They didn't have the ability to install those. There's not a lot of stuff that is really built for K-12 educators. And so, yeah, that's where I stepped in, built the range, provided things like mock interviews. I do panels and judge student showcases and some of their capstone courses to try to get them some constructive feedback or on their career paths and really try to bridge that gap between high school and either college or straight directly into the industry as quickly as possible so that we can get all the support we need in cybersecurity. So we definitely need it.
We do, mate. And thanks for that, John. And I love talking about this because as a recruiter, like, people think that I can just help everyone get a job, whereas the reality is most clients, as John, yes, we get some junior role, but on the whole, it's mid or very senior level sought after folks that is what I'm tasked with hunting and finding. So I don't feel like I can help much in my day job. I feel like I should be doing more. And it's nice to hear that you are, mate. And I think the last bit you said there was bridging that gap. When they come out of high school, there's that gap there where they haven't got any commercial. The minute they get people get commercial experience, I feel like the game changes. And it's like it gets a lot easier for them, especially if they've got a certification or two and stuff like that. So I think aiming to bridge that gap between the two is good, mate. What was that like in COVID then? I bet that was like a logistical nightmare, wasn't it? Or was it quite good fun and okay?
I was lucky enough to find a partner, and we just built, consider it private cloud infrastructure. So kids they could use a Chromebook. That was the only requirement that we had. They didn't have to have any super powerful computer. We set up everything for them. They would log into our systems, and they would be able to essentially do more offensive and defensive techniques within a safe, guided infrastructure. Teachers are able to leverage their curriculum and whatever pathway they were on, whether it was provided with one of the many various vendors that support educators for different states, and just apply that to a place. There's a misconception, I think, with K-12 education, at least from a support and IT perspective, that they don't want to start teaching a bunch of hackers inside of their network, and they're really worried about the risk of that. And so they struggle at providing a safe, meaningful way to grow those kind of skills.
Yeah, no, yeah, cool, mate. I'm imagining it's definitely rewarding and good fun as well, yeah?
Oh, yeah, of course. Being able to actually have conversations that are usually meant for, yeah, some of the upper echelon of engineering in the professional world, and seeing some of the kids light up and they want to do reverse engineering of malware. And I was like, I've never heard of a high schooler have that sort of interest. But being able to actually peel back the covers and see what their interests were, because it seems either super simple that, oh, it's cybersecurity, but when you start to look at it, it's very complicated in terms of addressing what that starting point should be. What is an entry-level position? What are the requirements? What certifications do you need? All, behind a layer of a paywall or some confusing doctrine that not everybody really has access to. So I'm very fortunate to be able to be put in a position where I can assist.
Yeah, no, cool, mate. And I think if this type of attitude is taken now, there's definitely going to be more and more rock stars, and especially at that age. If people are talking about reverse engineering malware at that age, your brain is like a massive sponge. It can absorb stuff at a rate probably faster than the mine and yours put together, John. So I think if they're getting it at that time, it's going to bode well, isn't it, for the future?
That's the plan for sure. Trying to push the entry-level skill sets down as far as we can into early education.
Okay, mate, talking about career progression and education and stuff like that, I'm going to ask you about your certifications. I've just quickly looked down on LinkedIn here while we're talking. I think I can count 8 Splunk and Cribble ones in total. So it looks like you have not been faffing around when it comes to getting these insights you can give us, like in terms of those that could help the listeners, or any like key learnings you've taken away, or anything now that you wish you knew before you took them, or anything like that could be helpful for folks.
For sure. When I give presentations to educators and students, I go through some slides that I call the certification circus, because it is definitely overwhelming when you start looking at what the targets could be. I mean, the slides we go over have over 473 individual certifications. And so when we talk about what's the starting point look like, trying to break that down, whether you're looking at CompTIA or something other relevant, the best thing I can say is that find something that helps you, right? The certification is only as good as the skills are really what you make out of it. Employers are really looking for that actionability, the ability to actually execute skills. From a certification perspective, it can prove that you have a skill set or complement it and put a piece of paper behind it. But previously there's these certifications, and some of mine were lucky enough to go through Splunk certifications that had a lot of hands-on validation and tools and learning. Now you see a lot more boot camps or e-learning skills where you're just sitting through some videos and you maybe take a test, and it seems to be a lot more streamlined, which is good for at least presenting that to new people. But there's less focus, in my opinion, on actually skill delivery. And so when you have some of these certifications, you can walk into a room and people can almost have that vet of the ability to actually do something. My recommendation there, do something that's valuable, do something that enriches you, provide some value towards what IT domain, security domain, or other may actually benefit you, and then just keep going from there. There's no real requirements. Nobody's really going to judge you for having or not having a particular certification in most instances. It's really just how you can tie that into your day-to-day or what value you can provide to your organization.
Yeah, no, thanks, John. And you know what? There was I don't know if you saw all the commotion on Saturday on LinkedIn. There was the OSCP, I've done the OSCP Plus, and now you've got to pay to get it renewed and all that. And I did a post about it, and a few people did, and I think OffSec are changing their payment model and stuff like that. And everyone's always got an opinion on certifications, but mine is, look, you're just never going to regret investing in yourself. I don't know, when I see profile, if I look down yours, John, and I'm looking at all, I'm like, there's a guy that's after it. Someone's going for it. If I see someone with a lot of certifications, I'm like, yes, they need to have the commercial experience as well, and the so on and so forth. But it shows a certain level of get up and go aptitude. It shows that someone's after it in their career. And yeah, I just never think it can go down badly. So yeah, they're always a controversial topic, certs, but I'm always recommend people, just, you're never going to regret investing in yourself.
No, that's definitely a great point. There's really no bad certification because it's all learning, especially if it's something new. But you put it well, pair it with your experience, right? Have them complement each other so that you're really going with a multi-pronged attack, so to speak, right? When you're presenting yourself to employers, even prospective or current.
Yeah, cool, mate. This might be a difficult one to answer, John, but what kind of skills and attributes and characteristics do you think make up a highly successful security engineer in today's market? What are you looking for, and what are other people at kind of director level after at the minute?
Yeah, great question. For me, everybody will harp on soft skills. 100% valid. Being in IT and engineering, that's something that many individuals struggle with, and it's very hard to address something like that. So definitely focus on the soft skills. It comes quicker for some people, but it's definitely a struggle, myself included. Being able to work really from a both individual perspective as well as a team, right? You're going to have both opportunities. You rarely succeed alone. Being able to take an individual approach to things, do that, some of that self-learning, because if you're away from your team, how else are you going to enrich yourself? But being able to also work within a team to actually go towards mutual goals, have that dual threat and success for sure. The pace of cybersecurity is so fast that you almost need multiple ways to actually move forward, whether that's on your own research, on your own time, or gaining experience from your peers and colleagues and leadership as well, because those are the ones that really will drive you. And the only thing I could put it, and probably heard it before, try not to be the smartest person in the room, right? Mm-hmm. That's the definition of growth and realizing that you actually can move up, because if you're already at the top, there's really nowhere to go. So place yourself accordingly.
Yeah, no, I like that, mate. And it's that smartest person in the room comment. It's, someone said to me, if you're not making mistakes, you're not pushing yourself hard enough, if you're not feeling uncomfortable and a bit nervous and stuff like that. And I'm not too bad on these, John, but I used to do them on the LinkedIn lives, and I used to get really nervous. And it's like that whole getting comfortable, feeling uncomfortable thing, and just pushing yourself. And it does really help the communication. I know from stalking you on LinkedIn, mate, you do some speaking and stuff like that. And was that nerve-wracking? Was that hard to get used to at first? You seem like you're pretty good at it now.
I appreciate that. It's definitely welcome feedback. It's taken some effort to get there. I still stutter with ums and uhs and stuff like that. So trying to identify a good pace for what the viewer and audience will actually adapt to. I was lucky enough that I started kind of quote unquote public speaking when I was doing math research, mostly at least from a large audience perspective. And so that you have very niche, complex topics, and that audience is really much there for that. So you don't have as much judgment, so to speak, that you may have. So it's an easiest introduction. It was ingrained for months doing that stuff. So I was very comfortable being able to talk about it. And so I was lucky enough to start there, but definitely got some coaching along the way and how to deliver and fluctuations and all that fun stuff that we need as engaging presenters.
Yeah. Now, do you know what? It's definitely the more you do it, the better you get. Because we have...
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, it's true. So like before this goes out, we have some people in the agency and they edit it. And when I first started, I know you mentioned they're saying ums a lot. When I first started, they used to have to edit all my ums out, and it used to take them ages, whereas now I still do it a bit, but nowhere near as much. And it's, I don't know, the first time you do a pen test or the first time you do anything, you're probably not going to be that good at it. It's just getting yourself out there. If you started from a young age, that's a massive advantage. But yeah, I think people have just got to push themselves and get out there. But I'm just going to do a bit of a recap. So communication skills, working well as an individual, but also working well on the team, have that kind of obsessive nature, always be learning, especially if you're working remote and stuff and on your own, you've got to be wanting to push with the pace that security works at. And yeah, just try not to be the smartest person in the room. And if you can combine that with any form of kind of public speaking and pushing yourself there, as well as the technical skills, if you combine all those things, you're going to be dangerous in a good way, John, aren't you, really?
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Cool. All right, my friend. I'd like to hear two things. I'd like to find out about how you broke in and if there's any learnings there for the listeners. And also, I'd like to find out if you've got any guidance or advice for people that want to, because there's a lot of people that will want to get to director level that can't and how. So firstly, yeah, how did you break in, mate? And how, if I'm listening, how do I get to director level if I'm not there already?
You're doing intros, it made it sound almost as long as it feels. But if you go through that, I took a fairly, a roundabout way into cybersecurity. Landed in my lap around a time that the security standpoint of things was bleeding more into just everyday IT. And so doing things like best practices for access management was probably the start of things. But I caught my first security-centric role working for an oil and gas company, and it was actually a kind of a spinoff, and so they were building out everything. So I really got to see it from the ground up. But it really started earlier, again, just general IT things, as we address, like, you can't do something or produce a system and have it vulnerable because it could impact the business, and they don't want to lose money, so they want to actually protect some of their assets. So yeah, just having that general IT background, just seeing the adaptations of cybersecurity becoming more, quote unquote, mainstream. But frankly, I had a lot of support. My dad was my computer science and Cisco teacher when I was growing up. So oh, wow. I got that way too many hours of the day. And then I knew I was going to be just doing cybersecurity from very early. I started a program in college focused around cybersecurity. And yeah, just grew from there. I just knew that it was something I wanted to do.
I think one thing just to hone in on there is you said, oh, it was a roundabout way and it took a long time. And I was looking at something and it was that listing, like, it's actually listing people that were doing really well on social media with big brands and stuff. And one of the main things that they all had in common is they'd been doing it a long time. And I think it's easy to forget that. Like, I do your intro at the start of the show and you just whiz over it. But there's a fair few years there. There's probably a couple of decades there. There's a lot of time that it takes. And I think sometimes in the world of social media, it always looks like everyone's killing it all the time and smashing it. But it takes a long time. It takes consistency. And it takes putting one foot in front of the other for a long time. It must have been wicked to have your dad's a bit of a techie as well then, yeah?
As much as you would like to. Yeah, definitely started... I mean, I did computer science and competitive coding in high school, and so he was the teacher for that, and I struggled a bit with teacher-student-parent-child relationship as far as that goes, which is a great learning experience in itself and how to go with that, but yeah, it was, like I said, dumped in early. Yeah, and I've been in nearly every industry. I mean, you saw healthcare, oil and gas, education, small local government. Just kicked the tires all around there. And then that was what made me feel comfortable pivoting into consulting. And I'm lucky enough to be people manager now. It's not suitable for necessarily everybody. People can be highly successful as individual contributors. I'm not saying, hey, that's the end all thing to success. Definitely do what you're more comfortable with and where you actually feel like you can actually feel successful in your position.
Yeah, and you're right. It's not for, I think everyone thinks that the leadership and the CISO role or a director role or whatever, I think everyone thinks it is for them. But I always say to people when I'm talking to candidates, are you sure? Because it's probably not as easy as it looks. It's a skill set. I'm sure you find that actually it's a lot different from just having your hands on the keyboard, isn't it? And it's rewarding. It's great. The trappings that come with that and all this. There's a lot of plus points, but it's not without its challenges, shall we say.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah, definitely a different skill set, getting your hands a little bit off keyboard. And if you are a tech mindset and engineer focused like I am and was, it's difficult to step back. But the biggest and most rewarding thing is that you actually get to grow bigger than you can as yourself. It's a whole team approach, and you can be single-threaded yourself and work as much as you want to, but being able to actually fulfill and be successful as a team is, in my opinion, more rewarding than it can be potentially as just a sole contributor, at least from a holistic perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, mate. Definitely, like you say, if it was easy to get that old cliche saying, if it was easy to get a team absolutely rocking, everyone would be doing it. It's definitely going to have its challenges. But yeah, in terms of like online material and stuff, I used to say books, but it's probably a bit old-fashioned. But any kind of podcast or online learning material that you're consuming? I know you've been to some conferences and stuff recently. Yeah, is there anything that you've seen out there that's helped you recently? Could be security related, could be self-development, or just generally stuff that can help the listeners' careers grow. What content are you consuming that could be helpful, mate?
Yeah, you mentioned conferences. If you can attend conferences, definitely go out there, engage with the community. Get out of our closets, right? We need to be able to do that. It's a great experience. DEF CON's a good one. Any of the local B-Sides conferences are fantastic. Check your local listings as far as that's concerned, because they really are everywhere. But from like a podcast perspective, I hop around randomly. I don't have any like dedicated cyber podcasts I listen to. They're kind of all over the place. Krebs has a couple of them. But the podcast I probably frequent most is Stuff You Should Know. That definitely fulfills my need to learn and stacks up my bucket of absolutely random facts. And so I like that when I'm driving. It's not exactly a podcast, but more fundamental, or at least from an improvement perspective. There's a talk that Simon Sinek gives or gave. It does it in a couple different formats, and he's kind of got a book about it. It's called Start With Why. That was something that really probably iterates the most with me on a day-to-day basis, and how I approach things, how I approach teams, how I approach tasks and priorities, or really what problems I'm going to solve and how we're going to solve them, because it really addresses how businesses and really people operate and how they're perceived is probably even the most important part.
Yeah, cool, mate. It's amazing. I've heard that book mentioned before. I think it's amazing how many people that has helped and been like an anchor for people to refer back to. It's good, but we'll get all these things in the show notes. Also, as well, those slides you've got on the certs and stuff like that, if there's stuff in there, like anything like that could be helpful, if it's cool with you, we can get stuff in the show notes. It'll be good. Your certification slides that you mentioned about 10 minutes ago, is that giving people the correct pathway depending on which subsection of IT or security they want to be in? Or is it defining what benefits you and how? Can you tell us a bit more about it, mate?
Sure. There's three ones. One, I gave an overview from K-12. One of the most common ones we see that's the stepping stones is CompTIA. And so doing A+, Sec+, Network+, those kind of things are being more adapted into high schools now and certainly accepted within the industry. So that's the starter one. There is one large one that, to your point, it breaks it up by all the different types of roles within the industry, going over things like offensive or defensive or network technologies or cloud and assets and risk management, all the different types of security, or at least domains and specialties. And that's where you see 470th of them, is because they start out on the easier side and progress more into the either complex or more mature, or you have to have 7+ years of industry leadership to even start out on some of those. But I break it down into three kind of different levels between beginning, intermediate, and advanced, where you can start with something like CompTIA, like IT fundamentals. That's bare metal for what we need to do. And again, another thing that, some people jump off on the wrong foot is they forget that cybersecurity, this first word cyber, you have to have a fundamental understanding of computers and networking and stuff like that to be able to have the nomenclature and common phrases, but common technical aspects and framework there. And then you can move into either like CompTIA Security Plus, which is purely security focused, SSCP, so it's a systems security certified practitioner, or GSAC, which is the GX Security Essentials. Those are like intermediate ones. And for on the advanced ones, you usually get more specialized, right? When you're looking at these, they're cloud specific ones from every cloud service provider, AWS, Azure, and Google, or things like the CISSP. You mentioned OSCP, it's definitely more on the advanced side. But as you grow, those are the ones that when you go back and you talk about pairing things up, if you really are going to specialize in something at a very high level, go ahead and get the company cert, really validate that you have that skill set, because you can't walk in day one and go get your OSCP. It's just not going to happen. If you do, please call me.
Yeah, or me.
Yeah, exactly. Two people right here. Please. Context, you know, in the bottom, right?
Yeah, but you know what, mate? By the way, that term slide, those slides will be really good, because a lot of people are unclear, confused, not sure exactly how things go down in relation to a certification path. So I think that'd be really good. And I think to your point as well about people do, you said at the start, yeah, you know, people miss out the cyber bit of security, and they do. Like, so many people want to come in and literally, like, I know we're joking, but some people want to come in and just do OSCP straight away and dive in, or they want to come into security and be a SOC analyst straight away, or a pen tester straight away. And the reality is, like, if I look at your background, John, you've come up through and you've done some IT jobs, and you know, and it's like, to get that sysadmin background and stuff like that and get the fundamentals laid down, it's hard to beat that, mate, isn't it? You've got to come up through the correct path to give yourself the chance, haven't you?
Yeah, you have to really know the landscape from within you're working, right? This is the security landscape is just overlaid on top of any IT, computer, networking, software. It's just a component of that. So being able to actually step back and have that fundamental understanding of how things can be interpreted, misinterpreted, changed, because some of the largest quote-unquote threats or breaches are just either misconfigurations or things that were designed in one way, but people started using them in a different way. And so they, having a blended approach and being flexible, and I think I benefit from having such a diverse background, is because I can work in different domains. And people that try to shorten that road, so to speak, as they try to go directly into something, you're going to be have tunnel vision. You're going to be certainly limited in what you're able to address because of that tunnel.
Yeah, I agree, mate. And I think coming in from lots of different industries, and John, so did that, I'm guessing it kind of, you learned the nuances of security in different worlds. I'm imagining it's kind of pushed that and exercised that learning muscle. So it's kind of really helped, because I think people that just stick in one environment for a ridiculously, it's nice for people to stick around, but if they just stay in one environment for like forever, I think that can hinder them. So did you learn a lot from security in different industries over the years? Did that really help?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, if you're a loyalist to a particular company, then more power to you. Go reach out to your community. It's more important almost to engage there for a change of perspective and see how other people may be doing the same thing differently. If you compare some private industry versus small local government, my experiences there, it's eye-opening to see how different companies operate and what they'll call their like strategic advantage and how they do things. But really, we're all kind of messing with the same packets and the same protocols. And so at some level, there's a commonality to everything. And so being able to address that and understand it, yeah, definitely interesting for sure.
Yeah, cool, mate. So we briefly talked about mentors earlier. I know you said your dad was a mentor early on. Have you had any other mentors over the years, or have you got any advice for people getting a mentor? I know internally within Fulcrum, there's like mentors and people get a mentor and stuff like that. So yeah, any kind of advice for people listening on getting a mentor and your overall thoughts and how it's helpful, John?
Sure. The biggest indicator, when you're, if you're searching for a mentor, hopefully it just falls into your lap. That's probably the most beneficial thing for anybody is if they have that almost personal approach to things and maybe even have a pseudo friendship through business connections or something like that. The biggest feeling is the mentor should make you feel like a priority to them, even if in reality, you know, that they're maybe a busy individual and hopefully they are and are learning things themselves that they can pass on to you. But if they actually give you that feeling that your time matters to them, that's definitely somebody who cares. The biggest aspect that I would point out when looking for a mentor, or even especially being a mentor, is a mentor will have the hard conversation with you. And it's because that mentor does care. They care enough to not only take the time to talk to you, they care enough to have that hard, difficult conversation. It's going to be difficult for both parties. You may have to take some constructive criticism. People that don't care will not take the time. And so recognize that fact and learn from it, because pat on the backs, everybody loves pat on the backs, but a good mentor will definitely give you a swift kick in the butt when you need it. And that's how we grow.
Yeah, definitely, mate. And I think sometimes having those tough conversations can be hard, but I think when you have them, that's where the progress is made and that's where the growth is done. John, like internally, what do you, for people listening, like, what, you know, the guys and girls on the team at the minute that are like progressing the most, is there anything they're doing differently, or is there anything people that are growing fastest? Is there anything any insights you can give us there in terms of how and why certain people are really progressing and optimizing their careers? Anything at all there, mate?
Be like almost aggressive in your personal growth. But between the pace and the breadth of cybersecurity, there is so much out there currently. It's continuing to grow. You will never get all of it. So that's one thing. And then flexibility is another. Again, because of pace and the depth, being able to pivot from one thing to another or have multiple domains. So it's that jack of all trades, master of none. Pick a couple things, maybe one, two, three, that you want to specialize in, or, you know, increase that depth of knowledge from a personal perspective, but be ready to take on new challenges as things adapt from the first generation of tool sets into the second and third generation. You're going to have to adapt with them. And we've seen that even in my particular domain, messing with security operations and SIMs, as we're seeing more AI and more automation and things are not what they used to be a couple of years ago. And so if you really want to stay relevant, you need to actually keep up with it and change along with the times. And hopefully you can do it quickly, because those are the ones that are most successful, the ones that do it at as close to the same pace as possible.
Yeah, definitely. I might have mentioned this on another episode, but I'll mention it again. Apparently the pace at which we're all going to experience change now, like apparently we're going to experience 3 or 4 years change in a few months. And like, it's happening so much faster. Let's say AI, automation and stuff. I've heard it was like pretty much everywhere in Vegas, wasn't it? Like, it was AI just everywhere you looked.
The second you got off the plane, and I mean that literally, they couldn't have put it more in your face if they smacked it as you stepped off. So yeah, it's great. AI is cool. It's the new search engine, so to speak, and trying to talk with my kids about, really, because they're going to be the ones that are most affected by this. We're seeing it now. We're adapting to it, but we didn't grow up, at least I didn't, with search engines that worked the same way that Google and stuff works now. And that's really what I see AI being in the future, is changing from being able to go through individual web pages to browsing and searching and having that same AI component where information is just delivered to us in a vastly different and hopefully more productive way.
Yeah. Some people are scared of it. Some people almost don't want it. It can allow us to do the really high value stuff. I've actually got a bit of a theory that, like, if you're obviously technically strong, but if you could combine that with some like consulting and communication and stuff like that, if some of these like more repetitive tasks are automated, I think it's just going to mean that we've all got more time to actually do like the really cool, fun and stimulating stuff within any job. I actually think it's quite exciting, providing that last bit you just said, providing you're willing to keep pace and stay on point and like actually be aggressive and really go for things, you know?
Yeah, I ebb and flow between how AI is introduced into certain things. But from a general perspective, I am hopeful that it's taking all of the more simple tasks, because I'm a proponent of, I call it iterative progress, right? Just taking small steps forward. Don't try to boil the ocean or take massive leaps. Maybe if you do, avoid as much risk as you can, of course. But then that introduces more things. To your point, it gives us more time to develop the more, I guess, the more deep skills, more complex skills, and actually take on the harder problems, because we've got this new base layer that's just happening for us. And it won't take your job necessarily. There'll be more jobs surrounding AI and the systems that run AI and AI development. And so it's actually introducing a new workforce there that's hopefully offsetting positive nature, right? Offsetting any negative impact that it could be providing by actually taking over some of the more basic structures. But again, I think we saw that with search engines and some low-level automation originally, and there wasn't, based on numbers that we're seeing, a huge negative impact there. It really just moves us faster to keep up with the pace of things. And I don't know. I don't know if that's us stomping on the gas more or what, but it's coming whether we like it or not.
Yeah, no, it's definitely here. But was there anything, I know it was everywhere in Vegas, was there anything in particular that you caught your eye that, because I know sometimes you look at stuff, you're just like, oh, but was there anything that you got, yeah, do you know what, that's pretty cool.
From an AI perspective specifically?
Or maybe both, John. But yeah, it'd be nice to hear if there's anything on the AI thing where you thought that, yeah, that implementation could genuinely help your team or help the guys and girls. Or
right on. The biggest thing that I see from a value-added perspective is doing things as simple as chatbots, having some sort of human input to be able to supply more information. We see a lot with Copilot now, with helping analysts and skill up, essentially, right? If they have a question, they might not know the answer, but they can put some basic stuff into AI. They'll get some search queries back or some supportive data back, or maybe even suggested next steps of what they can do to actually move forward, where previously they would either be blocked from doing that or up to the whims of Google results for what actually is meaningful to actually go there. And if we can actually lock down privacy for a lot of those things, that's probably one of the next layers of productive AI that we're seeing, is how we're actually securing the models. Because again, we're cybersecurity, so all of them have to be security by design. But because then we can actually be more proactive in a safe way, because we can do more complex things in a compartmentalized way to really get the tailored answers that we need. And that's some fun stuff that we're playing with as well. Anomaly detection, that kind of thing is also cool with the neural networks and being able to do more data faster. But yeah, no, I think like chatbots and Copilot are probably the most effective right now, day to day.
It is going to be fascinating, because obviously from a security standpoint or a defensive standpoint, everyone's got it. But then of course, obviously the bad guys and the black hats have got access to it as well. I don't see us getting bored, mate, in the next few years, put it that way. I think there'll be plenty to do.
No, that means for sure. And when you look at AI in companies and wanting to use some of this stuff, the people forget that if you're going to say, hey, I'd like dump this spreadsheet of maybe people's salaries or something like that, somebody else with your company could do some searching, and they might be presented with that data because you fed it into the AI engine and yet haven't locked it down. So there's definitely a lot of growth for us to do in maturation or around the sector. But again, it's helpful in some avenues, absolutely.
Yeah, cool, John. One thing I always like to talk about, so there's pockets of the market at the minute that are still really busy, but at the same time, there is people out there having a tough time. And while some companies are doing well and aggressively growing, others are laying off. So it'd be nice to talk about setback, or how you deal with setbacks, or from a mindset perspective, resilience. So yeah, any kind of go-to things that you do, John, that kind of get you through the tough times and keep you progressing and keep you moving forward. Any advice there, buddy?
Yeah, when we work in the job industry and at will work and everything like that, it's certainly a concern. I joined an oil and gas company a year before the 2015 oil crisis, so I definitely can understand that. If you have that flexible skill set, you are presented with more potential opportunities because you have a diverse application of your skills. So that mitigates a little bit of risk there if something should happen. Do some due diligence, do some social media. That's becoming much more popular nowadays. Get your voice out there, do some interaction with the community. That's, thinking back, that's probably number one, is develop a good community and friends and like-minded individuals and not only topics that you're interested in, but maybe things that you don't know a lot about. And then use that to drive on. If you're lucky enough to have things in your personal life that support you, I do some stuff with race car data analysis, and I'm a fan of cars and automotive industry and stuff like that, that I'm able to parlay into my day to day. It's just another way of just adding that additional level of comfortability and support behind the scenes that I can really just use and just have almost fun with it. If you're able to do that, you get best of both worlds.
Yeah, you do, mate. And it's always used the phrase making the resume 3D, like getting involved with the community, doing stuff online or speaking or whatever it is. It's helping your own profile, but it's helping other people as well. And I think it's almost like these days, like if you go on and there's like nothing on GitHub or there's nothing online, I think it's almost a bit like, what's going on here? Like, why? I think it's like we're almost expecting that community touch these days, I think, aren't we?
Yeah, I've heard what LinkedIn is the new resume. And if you don't have it completely built out there, then really what can we validate on? And yeah, I word of mouth is a great thing. So if you have colleagues and you're developing those friendships and they have an opening and you're looking for work or something like that, that's probably the most vetted avenue you can possibly get into a new career.
Cool. Yeah, John, car, I think everyone in Fulcrum's a car fan, aren't they? Everyone, they're like the cars, mate, don't they?
There's a couple of us, for sure. It's nearly a pandemic in and among itself, for sure. But yeah, we're enablers for that, absolutely.
Well, good, mate. It's been, like I say, it's been nice to sit, chat, and spend some time. This has been good and helpful for the listeners. People coming on to Next Gen CyberEd, how do people get in? Is there a way to get involved with that, or is there a way to apply, or for younger people to get the benefits?
Sure. If you're looking to get involved from a volunteer perspective, it's 501c3 nonprofit. Definitely open to physical support there. Just go to the website, nextgencybered.org. There's a take action button you can use there. Get in touch with me through any number of means, email, LinkedIn, wherever you can find me. The website's also good. Facebook page for Next Gen Cyber Ed. From student perspective, nearly the same thing. If you have questions, my door's always open for either just quick questions, more long-term mentoring, or just what next step should be for you. I do mock interviews fairly regularly. So if you're prepping up for something specific, 100% reach out.
Brilliant, mate. That's wicked, John. And yeah, I think, but whenever I track you down on LinkedIn, you're pretty easy to pin down, providing you're not too busy. I sent you the odd video and got a reply. So yeah, I think LinkedIn's a good place to get you.
Yeah, try to get back as quickly as possible, for sure.
But yeah, mate, that's wicked. So you do mentoring, mock interviews, and people can reach out via the website or via LinkedIn. That's good, mate, because that's definitely, I think at the minute as well, there's a lot of people out there that could definitely do with that.
And as you put it, right, LinkedIn's your resume. Everything I do, I try to post on LinkedIn, whether it's a link to it, my previous projects, and even presentations and stuff are all linked through my GitHub. So if you're looking for content or support stuff there, there's what I hope are good resources there. But that's definitely the way to get a hold of me.
Yeah, cool, mate. All right, buddy, do you think we've about covered it, John? Do you think we've about nailed it?
I believe so. It's been a great time.
Cool, yeah. No, likewise, mate. Seriously, thanks for your time, John. I know firsthand how busy you are, buddy, so I appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me and have a good chat. And yeah, really enjoyed it, and I'll speak to you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.